raise your hand. Are you ready to be a woman of power and passion? I believe we're all here to be women of power and passion. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction, and thank you to the committee. Before we get started, I'd like to tell you a little bit of my story. Would that be okay? All right. My work history started 25 years ago as a school teacher. My daddy's a minister, still is. He'll never retire. My mom was a school teacher, and from the time I was this high, it was pretty much known that I was going to go to college and be a school teacher. So that's what I did. But about my fourth year into teaching, I ended up in the principal's office more than my students. I kept getting in trouble. So with the birth of my fourth child in 5 years, I decided it was time for me to hang up the teaching hat for a while and be a stay-at-home mom. Now, when I did decide to go back to work, I came back as a CEO. I decided the only way I was ever going to be able to keep a job was to be my own boss. So I started a company with my two daughters, who were just teenagers at the time. And it's been a very fun ride to watch that company grow and expand. And I shared yesterday some of that experience. I had no business experience, but I have had a great experience in business. And my family, I have five children. I had 4 and 5 years, my first little cluster, and then I have a caboose, which is so much fun. We're a close family. We support each other. I cook almost every night of the week, and at least 3 or 4 nights, we sit at the table and we have dinner together. We still take family vacations together, and we are a close, loving, connected family. My husband and I have a great history. We were married for 15 years, got divorced, and then got remarried. So we've got the best of both worlds. We have like this 25-year history, and we're newlyweds. And on top of all that, I have a wonderful me life. I teach yoga. I work in small, intimate groups and teach lots of times, mainly women, how to be connected to their soul and their spirit. I work out with a personal trainer 2 times a week. I have connected loving and deep friendships with women. Pretty much have it all. But it wasn't always that way. It wasn't too many years ago. I was a full-time school teacher. I was exhausted. I was extremely overweight. And then my 2-year-old got sick. And she got really sick. And she was diagnosed with leukemia. And we started the fight of our lives. Miraculously, 2 of her 3 siblings were perfect match bone marrow donors. And we went to Minneapolis, where she had a bone marrow transplant. And we had everything on our side. We set up a prayer vigil for 6 weeks, 24 hours a day. We had the best doctors in the world. But on the night of May 21st, my husband was on the 9th floor of the Children's Cancer Center and held our 2-year-old in our arms as she took her last breath. Breathe with me right now. And that next morning, my husband and I went back to the Ronald McDonald House. My mother was there to help with the kids, and she took them out on the playground. And my husband looked at me and he said, "Life is never going to be the same." And I said, "No, it's not." And I knew in that minute there were only 2 options. If life was never going to be the same, it could get better or it could get worse. And I was not going to let my life and the life of my family be worse for Chelsea having been here. And I pledged from that moment forward. I said, "Dear God, if you will give me the strength to survive this experience, I promise from this day forward, I will go out and I will do everything in my power to make an impact and to make this world better." And that's what has led me to this moment, to be here with each of you. So thank you. So after Chelsea died, I went home and I healed. I cocooned, as we as women do. And I healed my heart and I healed my family. And then I was ready to go back. I love my family, but working fills up a part of me that being a mother doesn't. I want it all. I don't believe we have to pick. I wanted it all. So I wanted the great career, and I wanted a close and loving family, and I wanted a great marriage, and I wanted time for me. So I said, I'm going back to work. I'm doing it different this time. I'm not going to be a teacher. I'm not going to do what my parents expected me. I'm going out into the world, and I'm doing it with power and passion. So let me define for you what power and passion are to me. To me, power comes from your heart and your head. Your power is your attitude. Your power is an internal state of being. Marianne Williamson says, people think they're responsible for what they do. You're responsible for what you think, because what you do comes from what you think. It all starts right here. This is where our power is, in our heart and in our head. There's a great story where they did an experiment at a coastal aquarium in California. And they took a savage barracuda and its natural prey, the Spanish mackerel, and they put them in the same fish tank. But between them, they put a transparent barrier. So the savage barracuda would try to get to the mackerel, and it hit that transparent barrier, and it couldn't get through. And they left it that way for months. And then they removed the transparent barrier after months. And last I knew, for 2 years, those two fish had been swimming side by side in the same tank. And isn't that how it is with us so often, with our thinking? We come up against something we can't see, and we begin to think, well, that's the way it is. And we let our thinking hold us back and rob us of our power and our passion. Your power has nothing to do with your job title or the company you work for or how much money you make. Your power comes from within. Some of us got told that thinking that we couldn't see, got told when we were little, intentionally or not intentionally, that we weren't smart, or we weren't pretty, or we were, our family, we don't get that level of education, or we don't experience that kind of success. You just stay where you are. I promise you that kind of thinking has not been tested. And if you test it, it will not prove true. Power comes from within. Your passion is what you're out there doing in the world. It's what your hands and feet are doing. Your passion is the work that you're doing in the world. So your power and your passion. And I'm going to share with you today three things that you can begin to do right now that will help you live a life of greater power and passion. And those three things are to show up, to be bold, and to play big. And I'm here to tell you, you get to define that for you. It's not about, I want to make $1 million, I want to write a best-selling novel. If that's what it is for you, great. But whatever it is for you, you get to define what a life of power and passion is for you. So let's talk about the first one, showing up. Showing up. Showing up is about being present, about being in the present moment. And there's a theory out there that there are two worlds that we actually live in. We live in the inner world and the outer world. In the outer world, we're all here in the same room. This is our outer world reality right now. But in the inner world, you can be in a totally different place. Let's say that I get really boring and you check out and you think, oh, there's this woman over there droning on. But you start thinking about going to dinner tonight with your friends and the new outfit you got, and the new jewelry you're going to wear, and you wonder where you're going to go, and all of a sudden you're sitting around the dinner table with your friends, and you're no longer in this room. Our power comes when we align our inner worlds and our outer worlds, and we're in the same place at the same time. And I know you ladies know how to do that, because I saw it when those kids were singing. Was that not a powerful moment to be right here? To be 100% present, to be tuned in. It brought tears to my eyes when I know tears to yours. When we can align our outer world and our inner world. And I believe, you know, they always say the older generation. generation's concerned about the younger generation. It was long hair, it was rock and roll, it was video games. Now it's cell phones. I'm not worried about the younger generation and cell phones. I'm worried about our generation and cell phones. I was at fourth grade field day on Wednesday at my son's school. And there was a mama there, and she came with her two, she had a two-year-old and a four-year-old. And she plunked down, and she started doing this. And she'd say, go play with Sissy. Go watch Sissy do the balloon toss. And then come back. And she'd say, go watch Sissy eat water lilies. And she'd do this. And I thought, you know, in the outer world, she's here at fourth grade field day. But in the inner world, she's not here at all. And when we don't align our outer and our inner world, we miss the juiciness of life. I call it the Rasa. Rasa is the brand. It stands for the word of nectar. We miss the sweetness because she didn't see how Sissy hugged her little two-year-old brother when he came over to watch the balloon pop. And she didn't see how the two-year-old and the four-year-old found a ladybug and played and delighted with that ladybug. When we aren't present in our own lives, we miss the juiciness. There's a story, a project that the Washington Post did, and they took Joshua Bell, who's undisputedly the best violinist of our day, and they gave him some of the most difficult music ever composed back in the 17th century to play, and he did it on a Stradivarius violin that cost $3.5 million. They put him in the Washington subway system, dressed as a street musician. He played for 43 minutes. He's paid $1,000 a minute in concert. So that was a $43,000 concert. In that 43 minutes, 1,097 people passed by him. Seven stopped for more than 1 minute. And out of that 1,097, one man who came at the end stopped for the final 9 minutes. He is the only one, and when you watch the video, it's almost painful because he's looking around bewildered, like, do people not get what's happening here? He didn't know who it was, but he recognized it. He was present, and he saw, that's the rasa, that's the juiciness. Show up, and we're present. He got $9,000. When we show up, we've got to be awake and pay attention, and we've got to pay attention to what matters. At work, I know there are certain things you have to pay attention to. If you have to file a report on Thursday at 4, you've got to pay attention to that. That's obvious. But what else we pay attention to matters. Our health, our relationships, our inner spiritual growth, our contribution to the world. If you're focused on the fact that, you know, Janie has a run in her pantyhose and your boss got another new car and so-and-so took two cigarette breaks and Jeannie was on Facebook this morning, that's not what's going to bring you more power and passion in your life. Keep your focus on the important things that matter. And when you're focusing, by all means,
look pretty good. You know, kids get this. That Joshua Bell story.
There were 43 children that passed by him in that 43 minutes. And of those 43 children, without exception, every single one stopped. And without exception, every single one was rushed on.
You know, there are thousands, absolutely millions, of people that you wake up every day.
They're present moment. They are positive and
they are focused on what matters.
And you know what every single one of them has in common? They're under the age of 5. Children are our teachers. Have you ever seen a kid delight in a butterfly? Or you know my favorite? When kids see their teacher in the grocery store. Isn't that fun? It's just like, I guess they've never thought about how their teachers eat. Miss Smith. So it's beautiful because we can learn from them. when we pay attention to what matters and we look for the good in everything. My children are my teachers, and from the time they are small, I have said to them that you need to be thankful for everything. When we pay attention and we show up, we get to be grateful, and you know what else? We get to have fun. Mark Twain said, "I am an old man with many troubles in my life, most of which never happened." We can do that, can't we? We can write a story in our head when we're not in the present moment, we're going to the past or the future. My daughter Lindsay had gone away to college, and she came home, and she was home for the summer. You know, it's always a little awkward when they come home. They've been on their own, they're back home, you know, you're not sure what the rules are and how this is all going to work. And I thought things were going really well. And I went into my computer one day, and there were all these apartment complexes pulled up. And I thought, I didn't think anything of it. Well, I did, but I was like, I'm just going to monitor this. Well, the next day, more apartment complexes pulled up. And I'm thinking, well, I thought things were going so well. So finally, I say to Lindsay, "I saw you had some apartment complexes pulled up on the computer." And she says, "Oh, yeah, Bo's got all this lawn mowing equipment, and we thought maybe we'd see if we could make some extra money, and we were going to contact some apartment complexes about doing their landscaping." I had written in my head to Cam, now please tell me I'm not the only one. Oh, my gosh, she's so miserable here. We're horrible parents. She wants to move out. And then, you know, we can really spiral it. We can really take it somewhere. I know what's going to happen. She's going to move out. We're never going to be close. She's going to think we're horrible parents. We're putting a huge wedge in our relationship. She's going to have my grandkids. When we go to the future,
or the present, or the past,
we can write a story in the moment. All we have to do is be present. When my daughter was sick, if I went to the past, why Chelsea? Why'd my daughter have to get leukemia? Or if I went to the future, what happens if her platelet count doesn't rise? What do we do if she doesn't get better? I couldn't handle that, but I could get up every day and I could go to a 10 by 10 hospital room in isolation, and I could put on a mask and I could watch 12 hours of Barney. That I could do. I just had to be in the moment. Kids get it. You know that children, 70% of the sounds that come out of their mouth are not words, they're just noises. And more than half of those noises are laughter. So, we're going to take a little break and we're going to laugh.
I want you to know you're a good man because
I'm a certified laughter instructor. I've actually been to class on how to teach people to laugh for no reason. See, kids laugh. We as adults think something has to be funny to laugh. Now, anybody here jog? I hate to jog. Good, I'm in the right crowd. Oh, it looks like torture. But there are people who jog just to be healthy. Well, you know what? The health benefits of laughter are just as good. It increases the endorphins, and it does all this technical stuff that I don't really care about. I just know it feels good in my body, way better than jogging.
So stand up, we're going
to
laugh.
For the sake of laughing. Now, after we laugh, every time we're going to do this little thing, and we go, very good, yay. So do that with me. Very good, yay. Do it again. Very good, yay. Okay. So,
yeah.
So we're going to start out. How many of you saw The Wedding of Kate and William? We're going to do some British laughter. We're going to do some royal laughter. So act like you've got your little teacup. You can put your pinky out if you want. And you go, okay, laugh harder. Oh, very good, yay! All right, now we're going to do the aloha laughter. Aloha, aloha, aloha. Come on, you got to get your hands. very good, yay! Very good, yay! All right. Now, this is kids' favorite because I go into classrooms and do this. This is the lion laughter. So really get into it. You can do it. Very good, yay! around the block. Come on. Easy. Easy breezy. So when we show up and we're present, we get a laugh. You know, this morning, my husband always makes the coffee. I got up this morning at 5. I haven't. And they're beautiful, and they smell good, and they've kind of got like this oil on them. I'm standing in my kitchen just laughing about how delightful coffee beans are. It was amazing. Go home and look at your coffee beans. Wow, coffee beans. Who'd have known in that moment?
All right, the second thing we can do to have a life
of power and passion
is to be bold.
Now, Webster's has two definitions of boldness. The first one is fearlessness.
Do you know that you're only born with your fears?
The fear of loud noises and the fear of falling.
Every other noise is around you. And what happens with fear is
that it paralyzes. And the kids were running around. There was a baby pool there, and one of the kids got out and toddled over and fell into the big pool. Well, the mama froze. She couldn't move. She couldn't speak. She just said, you know, one of the other moms out there in the hot tub went and got the baby. She came up sputtering, and everybody laughed, and it was fine. But fear freezes us, and we can't move forward in our lives. I'm sure that some of you have experienced that at work. Report wrong, or you double book your boss for an appointment, or you miss a deadline, and all of a sudden you go into fear mode and you start thinking, uh-oh,
you know what?
Jennifer did this last month and she got written up, she got put on probation.
Again, there's no
fear in the present moment. You go back to the future. What happens if I get
fired?
Go to band camp. Timmy wants to play tuba in the Razorback band. And if I get fired and he doesn't go to band camp, he didn't get to play in the Razorback band, and then he's not going to get to live his dream, and he's probably going to be on the street being a bum the rest of his life because I filed a report wrong. We just
can't be in the moment
and let go of fear. Fear paralyzes us. The other definition of boldness is to stand out, like bold text or bold type or bold colors. To be noticed, to stand out. So how do
you notice? How do you stand out?
It's about being you. Oscar Wilde says, be yourself. Everyone else is taken. You just be the very best you can be.
I'm not going. I'll talk to anyone.
I'll talk to a tree. In fact, some of the
best ones I've ever heard. I have never been a tree from a bad
Now, my mother
is an angel. I don't know why God didn't really know that.
She is a sweet, sweet, quiet, unassuming woman. And if she goes to the party, I am probably going to be dancing on the tables. I'm going to be laughing. I'm going to be telling stories.
My mother, she's going to find one person.
And how does she live from power and passion? She's center of the attention telling the stories. If you want to be noticed in life,
at work, be who you are.
If you're an organizer, well, at work, you organize. You set up the systems. You get everything. I don't like systems. I like them when they're in place, but I can't figure them out. If that's what you're good at, do that.
If you're a nurturer,
if you're the one who notices when someone in the office is upset or having a bad day,
you want to make a difference in the world, you want to
make an impact, you show up and you be you. Be the best you can be. And what will that bring you? It will bring you a life that you love. A life of gratitude and thanksgiving. I've always said to my kids, you've got to be grateful for everything that comes into your life. And how do you do that? Because sometimes life sends a spin. Because our children are our teachers.
How many of your dogs?
Yeah, I have
two, sometimes three. My kids don't have a grandkids yet. for drop cup,
please. And it just grossed me out. I'm like, this is like lice on animals. This is just gross. It just freaked me out. I was like, there are fleas here. So I was just having a fit about these fleas. And my kids were like, Mom, you always told us you have to be grateful for everything. You have to be grateful for the fleas. So I just smiled, bombed the house like 8 times. And thought, okay, well, at least I got all the bedding clean. There we go. I kid you not, it was not a week later. I was reading a story.
They had excerpts of a diary from 2 sisters
in Nazi Germany. A concentration camp. And the younger sister was writing in the diary about how she was trying to make her older sister thank you for everything. And she was writing in her diary, we have to be thankful for everything. We have to be thankful that we're still together, even though we got separated from our parents. We have to be thankful for every morsel of bread they give us, because at least we have something. And then her dormitory got infected with fleas. And she was writing about, you know, Anna says, how can we be thankful for this? How can we be thankful for fleas? They're itching and they're crawling. The girl writing in the diary says, you know, they're creatures too, and they're surviving. We have to be thankful for everything. And a couple months later, the war ended. And after they were released from the concentration camp, they discovered that their dorm was the only dorm where women were not raped and tortured because the Nazi officers were afraid of getting fleas. We've got to be thankful for the fleas. And the third thing we can do to have a life of power and passion, play big. Play big. And how do you play big? You follow your dreams. You follow your dreams. Oliver Wendell Holmes says, what lies before us and what lie behind us are small matters compared to what lies within us. And our dreams lie within us. There's a story of a man fishing, and he had a stick. And he'd catch a fish, and he'd hold it up next to the stick, and if the fish was bigger than the stick, he would throw the fish back. This boy was watching him, and he just couldn't figure it out, so he went over to the man, and he said, why do you keep throwing back the big fish? And the guy said, well, this stick is the size of my frying pan. And isn't that what we so often do with our dreams? We just pick a nice, small dream that'll fit. But our dreams are meant to be big and to be bold, and they're meant to be what you want your dreams to be. There are only 2 reasons that dreams don't happen. The first one is that you don't have a dream. Some people have given up on their dreams. They don't even know what it is. A lot of people, they could go into Ruth Chris Steakhouse and ask what they want to order. Butterfly, medium rare. I'd like baked potato, sour cream and butter on the side, salad, blue cheese, no croutons, water with lemon, lime. And then after the waitress leaves, what's your big dream in life? Well, right now, I guess it's a filet medium rare. And that dream has to be big enough to make a profound difference in your life. And there's a story of a wealthy man, a philanthropist, and he was asked to raise $20 million to build the wing of a hospital. And within 6 months, he had raised $20 million. And his church, seeing his success, thought, well, we'll put him in charge of raising $10,000 to redo the church kitchen. How hard could that be? After 6 months, he had raised $2,000, and he finally just wrote the check for the rest himself. It wasn't a big enough dream. It wasn't bold enough.
It didn't make a profound difference in his life.
What are your dreams for your life? Let me tell you, they cannot be limited by your current reality. You know, Michael Jordan was cut from the high school basketball team his freshman year. What if he had let that coach's opinion of him alter the course of his life? Wilma Rudolph, first black woman to earn 3 gold medals in track. She was born with polio. She didn't even walk right until she was 12. Your current reality can't determine the size of your dreams. Einstein, for heaven's sakes, couldn't even get into college. They thought he was retarded, mentally retarded, until he was 9. Your reality cannot be determined. Your reality cannot determine your dreams. You know, kids get this too. You ask a kid what they want to be. Oh, an astronaut, a fireman. My son,
definitely want to be a lion.
And your dream, whatever your dream is, it's your dream. And you don't have to justify it or explain it to anyone. My husband's a dentist, and when we were in Arizona, four children under the age of 5 running around the house. He had a buddy from dental school who came over for dinner. And I was making dinner, and kids, and I was slicing up apples, and I was mixing up formula, and I was trying to fix dinner, and there were kids everywhere, and this woman I had never met turned to me, and she had great big tears in her eyes, and she looked at me and said, "I've been dealing with infertility for 13 years. I want nothing more than to have children. You are living my dream." That was her dream. Your dream is your dream, and you don't have to justify it to anyone. And when we live a life of our dreams, we get to contribute. We get to be of service. There's a story of two men who are walking along a pier, and they're on the pier. And one guy leaned over and tossed him back into the ocean, and his buddy said, "Why are you even bothering? There are so many here. It's not going to make a difference." And the guy leaned over, picked up one more starfish, and said, "Made a difference to that one." I spoke at a church in Branson, Missouri 3 years ago, and I went back to preach a couple months ago. When I arrived, there was a woman in the parking lot, and she was waiting for me. I knew she was waiting for me. I got out of my car, and she rushed over, and she said, "I was so excited when I heard you were coming again. I just couldn't wait to see you. You said something in that service 3 years ago that changed my life." And I said, "What did I say?" And she said, "Wow, I don't remember saying that." And I always record whenever I speak. And when I got home, I went back and replayed that sermon. I did not say what she heard. She got what she needed. I got to serve.
I got to make a contribution because I was living my dream.
So if we want a life of power and passion, three things each and every one of us can do right now is to show up, be present, pay attention to what matters, and look to the good in everyone and everything all the time. And we'll have a life of fun and laughter. We can be bold, live fearlessly, stand out and be who we are. And we'll get to have a life that we appreciate and we love, a life of thanksgiving. And we can play big, live our dreams.
Oh, it's important to have your life. Remember the dreams?
You got to help everybody know. There's a great Indian shaman who said, "Your subconscious mind cannot tell the difference between criticism of another and criticism of yourself." Whatever you block for someone else, you block for yourself. There might have been some of you and I,
"Why talking about how great my life was?" You were thinking, "Well, good for you."
You block my success, you block your success.
Subconscious mind
doesn't know the difference between what you block for someone else and what you block for yourself. The good news is, you celebrate my success, and the universe sees it as celebrating your success and brings even more to you. So in conclusion, I want to tell you a story, because we're each at a different place in that journey of living a life of power and passion. And this story has to do when I decided, I've taught yoga for years, but I decided I wanted to up my level of fitness, so I decided I was going to work out with a trainer. I asked around, I heard about this guy, Steven. He trains groups of women in his garage. First class, I called him, first class was free, I could afford it. I thought, okay, I'll go. So I show up at Steven's. It's a beautiful sunny day, and so I think I'm a little bit early. There are other cars. I knew I was in the right spot, so I get out of my car to enjoy the sunshine, and I hear these noises, these moans and these groans. And oh my God, how much more? Oh, Stephen. I kind of walked towards the garage and I thought, am I really hearing this? And I was almost like, you know, a train wreck. I was like compelled and repelled at the same time. And just as I was turning to go, the garage door opens. And sure enough, it looked like the carnage of a train wreck. There were bodies everywhere. People were white-faced. One was touching your trash can. One was touching your chest and gasping for air. And I thought, oh, I just almost... Walk, Stephen.
Chestnut curls, beautiful white smile, big blue eyes, down with brother shorts.
It comes out.
You must be him. I'm ready for you.
See? $100 an hour? I was staying. And just as I'm getting ready to engage with Stephen, I hear this other woman yelling his name, Stephen! Stephen! I turn to look at the intruder, and there's this woman just hobbling down the driveway. And I thought, well, that's good. If somebody, you know, physically impaired can do the class, surely I'm going to be able to do this, because I was beginning to question myself. She says, Stephen, I have never been in so much pain. I can't sit down. I can't stand up. I can't even walk right. Everything hurts.
Here's the kicker, the last one.
I haven't been in this much pain except for surgery.
Except for surgery? Well, at that point, I probably would have run, except that Stephen had tight grasp on my hand and my legs were shaking so bad I couldn't move.
That woman, though, she's become a good friend of mine, and I'll tell you something else about her. She's a liar, liar, liar. I have had all five of my babies by C-section, and not a word of them
heard me.
Not near.
I didn't know that we had nothing on the outside of our knee.
I had come in places I didn't even know existed
on my body. But I stayed.
And I came back 2-3 times a week for over a year now. And you know why? Because when Stephen had my hand and he knew I was scared, he looked at me and he said, Kim, it doesn't matter where you start. What matters is where you're going. And so it is with our journey of living a life of power and passion. It doesn't matter where you start. What matters is where you're going. As a teenager, my family was really poor. My daddy was a minister. My mom was a school teacher. We actually qualified for food stamps because we had so many kids in the family. My dad drove the good car. It was a Torino station wagon. We had Pinto. It's probably since blown up. But it was royal blue, rusted out wheel wells, and this car had one little quirk. You could only turn right. If you turned left, the car died. Out that if I wanted to get to some place that was to the left of me, I had to just make enough right turns. And that's how you get to where you're going. Just make enough right turns in life. Thank you.